From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, why are you on this planet? Jack Canfield joins us with his Golden Motorcycle Gang. Now, you might know his name because he's one of the co-authors of the Chicken Soup book series. So I'm looking forward to that. Here's a little program note for all of you. We will have a live Coast to Coast show for you on Thanksgiving night and also on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, live shows for you. And then on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, live programs for you. So those of you out there in our 559 radio station affiliates, just make a note of that. Live programming on all the holidays. Here's what's happening. If the world ends in 2012, the sun won't be to blame, according to NASA. Contrary to what some feel would be the thing that you're going to believe, that the star is not capable of blasting out a solar flare powerful enough to burn our planet to a crisp, NASA says not to worry. Most importantly, however, they simply say there just isn't enough energy in the sun to send a killer fireball 93 million miles to destroy us. However, I beg to differ in that if an X flare hits us, and it's a big one, it takes out the grid, and that's going to ruin a lot of things for a lot of people. For a long, long time. New research has found that radioactive material in parts of northeastern Japan exceeds levels considered safe for farming. The findings provide the first comprehensive estimates of contamination across Japan following its nuclear accident in 2011. Food production is likely to be affected, according to the researchers. Iranian officials admit now that they have uncovered evidence of another computer virus labeled Son of Stuxnet by cyber experts at the Islamic Republic sites. It's the second major weaponized virus to turn computers there into lethal weapons with devastating destructive power. Now, the new program, which was discovered in mid-October, says that it has the capability of destroying the system it infects, secretly penetrating them, according to some experts, creating backdoor vulnerabilities that can be exploited to destroy the networks at any time its creators may choose. So the Iranians do have some computer problems at their nuke sites. If you go to coasttocoastam.com and take a look at the highlight reel, you're going to see something very strange from China. New photos have appeared in Google Maps showing unidentified structures in the middle of the Chinese desert. The first one is an intricate network of what appears to be huge metallic stripes. Nobody really knows exactly what it's for. If you do, send me an email, george@coasttocoastam.com. I mean, it's very, very strange. To me, it looks like some kind of a grid system for something, for satellites, who knows what. By the way, I had one of the most disturbing dreams I have ever had, so much so I'm bringing in just a second Jillian Holloway to try to interpret this for me. What I saw in the dream, and I was clearly in the Los Angeles area, massive flooding. I mean, massive flooding. It was like water was just rolling over the coastlines to the point where cars were just floating away. I was stuck in the middle of this, watching all this. I pulled out my cell phone camera because a huge massive tornado was rumbling by at the same time. I took a picture of it and then I tried to send it to webmaster Lex, and apparently I didn't know how, and that got to be very frustrating. So Dr. Jillian Holloway, she's been on the program with us before, internationally recognized expert in the field of dream analysis. Jillian, I've got to ask you, what is this dream all about?
Well, George, any kind of disaster dream like that is usually coinciding with a personal situation in most cases. Now, most often, it's a personal situation that has some kind of upheaval associated with it. So you know, without going into detail, whether that's the case or not for you.
Well, so far, no. Maybe it's something that could happen. Who knows?
Well, usually this type of dream, if it's precognitive, it tends to be external. If it's personal, it tends to be after the fact, like if you find out that a member of your family doesn't have long to live, mm-hmm. that type of scenario, this type of tornado, upheaval, end-of-the-world apocalyptic dream does come after you get really terrible news that just shakes you to your foundation.
Why was I there as a witness, and I'm desperately trying to let my webmaster know what was going on, and I couldn't do that, and it was very frustrating.
Well, that's more typical of what we call the hero syndrome, where you have a sense of being in a situation that's obviously beyond your control, and yet you feel the sense of responsibility that you want to get help, you want to get the word out, you want to do whatever you can from your position. So that's fairly typical, actually, in an emergency situation in dreams.
Can we say there's a possibility that there could be something severe, weather-wise, earth-wise, for California because of this dream?
Yeah, we could say that there's a possibility of that. It usually breaks down to be about 60% likelihood. Now, let me add real quickly that it doesn't tend to transpire as it appeared in the dream. Once things happen in real life, you say, oh, yeah, that's what that dream was.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't tend to play out in the exact detail as the dream.
So I was watching, huge waves of water. It wasn't like a tsunami. It was just like flooding. It just kept coming, and cars were just floating away, and people were screaming, and there was nothing I could do about it.
Yeah.
Very frustrating. Okay, let's keep our eyes on it, huh?
Yeah, thanks for bringing it to, thanks for announcing it.
Okay, I wanted to go on record, at least, with that. Ilya Zhytomyrskyi, a co-founder of the startup social networking site Diasporia, that put an emphasis on privacy and user control, has died. He was only 22 years old. The cause of his death not revealed. He was in San Francisco. Very sad story there. A 2-year-old boy from Arizona, the parents listen to this one, has been forced to undergo 18 surgeries in the past year because he swallowed a nickel-sized battery. No one saw the little one swallow the remote control battery. It apparently had lodged in his esophagus for at least 3 days. He started having cold-like symptoms, and then it literally burned his esophagus. He's now had 18 surgeries. Just keep those little batteries away from the little ones, especially as you get close to the Christmas season and you have all these toys and things. Older women who got more exercise and less television time were the least likely to be diagnosed with depression, according to a U.S. study of thousands of women, with physical activity having the biggest impact. According to the findings published in the American Journal of Epidemiology, researchers found that women who reported exercising the most in recent years were about 20% less likely to get depression than those who rarely exercised. On the other hand, the more hours they spent watching television each week, the more their risk of depression crept in. Dr. Peter Bregan with us, his latest book, Medication Madness. Peter, why would watching television get people depressed?
Well, yeah, I think it can. But, George, can I take a crack at your dream first? Because I'm a psychiatrist and
okay.
a therapist.
Oh, now I need a psychiatrist?
No, you don't. That's the whole point.
All right.
Listen, I live your dream every day, and I think you do, too. We both live this nightmare where we see things, we're more honest about things, we see the mayhem and the death. I see it in my field of psychiatry. You see it in even broader fields. And then there's that daily frustration of how do I connect and communicate this to people? I think it's just a living expression, check it out,
all right,
of what you deal with, seeing more than others see, and just that frustration of how can we get the others to see this?
Interesting. Okay.
I feel it all the time with what we're doing to our children with psychiatric drugs, what we're doing to our soldiers with drugs, what we're doing with shock treatment. So I listen to this, and it just sounds like my life, your dream.
All right. We'll look at that, and we'll see what happens. But back to this study. Television makes women depressed. How come?
Well, you know, it goes two ways. First of all,
by the way, they didn't say listening to the radio. They said watching television.
Yeah, they said watching television. But, you know, they're comparing women who watch TV for 1 hour or less a week to women who watch TV 21 hours or more a week, more than 20 times more. And how do you know that that is a result of the depression or a cause of the depression? And it's the same with the exercise. They're comparing these wildly divergent groups, people who exercise 10 minutes or less a day with people who exercise 90 minutes a day,
mm-hmm.
who exercises 90 minutes a day. And this study's out of my alma mater, Harvard, and they have to admit before they're done, and they do admit, that for all they know, the women weren't exercising and they were watching TV because they were depressed.
Uh-huh.
So having said that, you know, who knows about this, I go 100% with exercise and cut down on your TV and live life and enjoy life, and it's the best antidepressant there is. Life is the antidepressant. Drugs we're seeing more and more, George, are making people worse.
You got that right. Peter, thank you so much. We'll check in with you again. He's a great expert and source here for us at Coast to Coast AM. Talking about weather and calamities, a strong earthquake hit the waters off eastern Indonesia, sending people on nearby islands fleeing. They thought, oh no, here we are, tsunami once again. It did not happen. It was a 6.3 magnitude quake. But what's going on with forecasting earthquakes? Up next, a very special person joins us, David Nebhan, as we talk about forecasting the catastrophe next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. David Nebhan is an advocate who has been calling for the creation of an earthquake warning system for the U.S. West Coast for the last two decades. He proposes a plan with zero cost, now that's new, and available for implementation like right away, whereby newspapers and other media might publish higher probability advisories for elevated seismic risk areas, and has taken this controversial debate public in many forums with the USGS, Caltech, and Southern California's Earthquake Center. Here's David Nebhan. David, how are you?
George, thank you for having me on. It's a great privilege to be able to share some important words with your audience, and I'm deeply indebted to you for the opportunity.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, when you take this to the media forums and these various organizations, what's their reaction to this?
There's no love lost between me and USGS. Your listeners should be aware, you know, there's been a 100-year litany of negativism that has come out of USGS over the last century.
Mm-hmm.
The earthquake prediction is impossible crowd have done a remarkable job of sidecasting this matter into the dustpan of history. Dozens and dozens of eminent seismologists from 1850 on have put the same message that I'm writing about in my books before the public, and had it quietly shunted off into oblivion. So the fact is, though, that I'm the individual who is directing a public opinion campaign to impel the governor of the state of California to impanel the California Earthquake Prediction Advisory Council to take this matter where it needs to go in Sacramento to determine the viability or fallibility of the plan that I'm proposing.
Now, David, you're not a seismologist, so has that created an issue for you when you try to convince them, hey, there's a better way here to predict earthquakes?
Well, yes, thank goodness I'm not a seismologist, or else I'd be giving you the same old litany of negativism. I have indisputable rock-solid evidence, a sort of unassailable proof that has allowed me to author two books on the subject and caused science journals in Europe and the United States to grace their publications with my opinions, buttressed by my 15-year tenure as an earthquake preparedness coordinator for the Los Angeles Unified School District. But really, you know, the Byzantine orthodoxy that says that every single brick in the academic brick in the pyramid of science has been laid by eminent professors, it's hogwash. I mean, you can look at the history of the world from Copernicus to Columbus and Galileo. It was two lowly bicycle mechanics, two grease monkeys from Dayton that built that contraption that took off at
Kitty
Hawk.
Right.
Not eminent professors. So I'm sure your informed listeners realize this, but no, I'm not a seismologist, thank goodness, or else I'd be giving you the same party line that has been trotted out there for the last 150 years.
You remind me a little bit of one of our experts who is a seismologist who doesn't go with the flow, though, David, the Jim Berkland. Yeah, who picks full moon, new moons, animals that disappear, and he puts them all together, and he's pretty uncanny with his predictions.
Well, I don't want to. I do know of Mr. Berkland. Obviously, he and I have been, both referenced in this in Reuters and many articles. I don't want to speak for him because he's certainly doing an excellent job of speaking for himself. But you're right. USGS drummed Mr. Berkland out of the Corps along with Marcia Adams and Before him, Dr. Leon Knopoff in the 80s, UCLA professor, and before him, H.T. Stetson in the 40s, and Charles Davison and Dr. Maxwell Allen in the 30s. This goes all the way back to, George, you'd be stunned, it goes all the way back to Alexis Perry writing just after the Civil War.
Jeez.
Or Richard Edmonds, who penned his evidence with a quill pen in the days when Texas was still a country. That's how far back this goes. And how entrenched this tenet of the tides triggering earthquakes is. That's how stunning the supposed amnesia that has bitten the American seismologist is. The great question isn't whether I'm right or wrong. The great question would be, what sort of amnesia bug is running rampant through the hallowed corridors of seismology? Well, that's the great mystery.
That's true. Take a few minutes here, David. Tell us how your system works.
Well, the evidence is pretty simple. It's as simple as those two balls that Galileo dropped from the tower in Pisa that came crashing to Earth. I looked at the history of the great killer quakes that struck in Southern California between Long Beach in 33 and Northridge in 94. And during those 60-year duration of the 20th century, 23 large magnitude 6.0 quakes or greater struck in Southern California. Now, George, one third of them struck during the astoundingly thin target window represented by the hours of dawn and dusk, during new and full moon near syzygy and or perigee.
There you go.
That is to say, a third of the killer quakes in Southern California struck within a time frame that represents about one-half of 1% of the total time during those 60 years, with the other two-thirds spread all over the clock, all over the calendar. Now, that resounding empirical evidence that the Earth is laid squarely in front of anybody with a pair of eyes and an open mind, the math says, would require random probabilities of 1 out of 50 billion for that to have happened randomly. I don't know about you, but I'm not willing to get on board with those kind of numbers, nor do I believe any thinking person listening would be.
No, they don't make sense. You're right.
It's a conjoining of gravitational tides, the conjoining lunar and solar tides that happen about 15 times a year, where the sun and the moon line up in such a way as to put maximum stress on the fault lines. And they don't cause earthquakes, but they would trigger a quake that is ready to happen on a fault line that is ready to rupture. And it's the final burden, the final straw on the camel's back that would cause so many of these great quakes to take place within these thin target windows, otherwise, without a periodicity there to explain it, it would be like winning the California lottery repeatedly in the same week. So,
and that doesn't happen. We know that.
No, of course it does not.
Can you pinpoint location? That's one of the biggest problems, because a lot of people may have these windows, and they may be accurate with these windows, but they can't pick the spot.
No, that's a good question, and I'm interested in being very honest and making sure that your listeners have the unvarnished truth. When I give these, there's 181 higher probability times and dates that go from now to the year 2020 in the book, forecasting the catastrophe, and it's in the earthquake almanac in the middle of the book. It's simple for anybody to read and keep track of for the rest of the decade. It is. The locale, though, is someplace on the San Andreas or Cascadia fault zone. Not Peru, not Turkey, not Japan. The thin longitudinal swath that represents the 118th longitude, somewhere between Tijuana in the south and Vancouver in the north. And that may sound like a great swath of the Earth, but comparatively, it's really not, and it's the first baby step toward an early warning system for the West Coast. Well, I'm not proposing that I have the end-all, be-all answers to, the seismic warning system that I'm proposing. I'm only putting it out there that I've got enough evidence that the Earthquake Prediction Advisory Council should be impaneled to take a look at it.
Okay, well, you tell us when we come back, David, on just what the media should do with these probabilities that would work. And by the way, If I didn't know it better, I'd say your last name was Lebanese.
I am Lebanese, just half Lebanese, just like you, George.
Yep, I knew the name. Okay, David, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment. One of his books called Forecasting the Catastrophe. We shall be back in a moment. We're going to talk more about his earthquake predictions, and we shall take your phone calls as well. If you happen to live in an earthquake zone, you definitely want to hear this. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Jack Canfield joins us. We talk about things about why are we even on the planet? Get ready for that. He's one of the co-authors of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and just looking forward to that chat with Jack. I wanted to share an email from listener James. George says, I just wanted to thank you all for doing the show on Lyme disease a few months ago. A few of us people with Lyme wrote you emails, and I'm glad you got the message. One of my favorite parts of being a coast-to-coast insider is the interaction we have with you, be it emails or live video chats, and listening to that show after writing you an email asking you to do it really demonstrates to me that you care about the listeners and what they think, and that we do, too, have an impact on our favorite radio show. I hope you reach your goal of 2,000 new members a month for Coast Insiders, because, as you often say, it's well worth it, and for less than 25 cents a day. I know I'll be getting memberships for more than one person this holiday season. Thanks for all you folks do. Well, that's what I wanted you to know. I just wanted to tell you about our Coast Insiders group. You can join, become a member of the club for a little less than 25 cents a day. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com. We're very proud of it, very proud of the club, and you can sign up for it anytime you want. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. David Nephan's website, earthquakepredictors.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. David, before we take some calls here, how would the media run these probable advisories, and how would you envision it?
Well, first things first, the governor's got to impanel the Earthquake Prediction Advisory Council to pass judgment on whether this plan holds water or not. That's the simple thing I'm asking listeners to do if they go to my website, to drop him an email and say, I heard the guy speak. He didn't sound insane to me, and what he's asking for seems simple enough, a fair hearing. That's the way we do things in this country before we pass judgment, and that's all I'm asking for. But if it is proved that these would be viable, the governor would simply it's a perfunctory, rudimentary system, not a heavy-handed czar, a safety czar sort of thing. It would be him requesting the media on the West Coast to first of all, to announce that after 150 years, no kidding, believe it or not, tidal interaction does trigger earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
The people on the West Coast should be advised that these times are well known, and that for whatever, you know, individual things tens of millions of people would want to do on their own volition, that would be the system. People could take their safety into their own hands. And not even talking about what the EMS, fire, police, and the little tricks the nuclear regulatory agencies and the utility companies could do. No one's ever asked them what they could or could not do, because this whole business has been sidetracked into oblivion. So it's a very simple system. It's based on common sense. It's based on everybody doing their own little thing on their own, moving the baby away from the bassinet during a higher probability window from the picture window.
Just to be a little safer, I guess, right?
Moving something that's heavy up that needs to be put down temporarily. Just doing 10 million people doing 10 million different things on a regular basis during these 15 or 16 times a year higher probability events would take the surprise away from the San Andreas. And, you know, that's the greatest weapon any enemy has, the element of surprise.
And now, what do you need to do to get this done? What do you need to do to get the governor to say, okay, I'll do this?
Well, what I'm going to need is I'm hoping that I'm speaking to, you know, I know what your show is, and I know that the people that listen to your show are good, you know, decent, open-minded people who would give me a shot. I'm hoping that everyone within earshot will go to earthquakepredictors.com, drop an email to the governor, tell him very simply that this plan should not lay in limbo anymore, that you heard a cogent and honest appeal on the air, and it requires 30 seconds of your time. Click the emails link and give one unstoppable, unified, powerful voice demanding that this matter be given a fair hearing.
Okay, so you have an easy system to get the email straight to them, right?
Yes, anybody that goes to the earthquakepredictors.com can see immediately shuttled straight to the link. And even if you disagree with me, you know, that's a good time to drop him a line and say, you know, I heard a big mouth on the air, and this fellow really needs to, I can't think of anybody who needs a muzzle put on his big mouth more than Mr. Nabhan. So would you please see to it that he is, publicly castigated for his remarks. So either way, the governor needs to heed this call and impanel that advisory board and determine whether I'm blowing hot air or whether I've got a system that holds water.
David, what about the moon? What about the moon when it has its own quakes, when the moon affects tidal waves? What about the moon?
Well, you know, people don't, our planet would be an unbelievably different place without the moon. It is the single most powerful celestial force on planet Earth. It affects our biology. The tides are well known. Io is a seething ball of magma, one of the moons of Jupiter, simply because of the Jovian tides. The asteroid belt exists because of the Jovian tides. The minute you bring tidal interaction down to Earth, though, that's when the seismologists start pulling their hair and screaming and moaning. It's amazing they've spent 150 years looking down into the Earth, and not one of them, well, with the exception of, you know, the Jim Birkeland and the
Calorie,
and all the people that I mentioned, the people that get castigated for it. The minute you look up and say, look at this amazing celestial body that drags our trillions of tons of ocean around our planet twice a day.
Yeah.
Imagine that this has nothing to do with that would make earthquakes the only thing on planet Earth. It would occupy the loneliest spot on a ridiculous list, the only worldwide phenomenon that is not affected by celestial phenomenon. And that's absurd. That's patently absurd. And then when you move the solar tides with the lunar tides during these conjoined moments, during syzygy and perigee, especially during perigee when the moon is 10% closer and the tides are 25% stronger, you've got a formula for a seismic disaster. And I'll take a shot at your dream, George. You know, I don't want to fearmonger, but Los Angeles is headed for one hell of a problem in a very short amount of time. That's not just me talking. Those southern sections of the San Andreas haven't moved in 300 years.
I'm talking about
the Coachella and the Mojave.
Long overdue, aren't they, David?
Oh, they're going to move. Every seismologist on the planet is quite sure of that. Even USGS is sure of it. They've estimated 2,000 dead, 30 to 40 to 50,000 injured, and they have no idea what the dollar amount is going to be. I'm guessing it's going to move soon. We can move forward doing nothing, and there's no plan out there other, you know, in lieu of somebody, in lieu of a better plan, I'm offering this. I know it's not perfect. I know it may not even be useful at all. But that's not the way we do things in this country. The way we do things in this country is when, and it's the duty of the governor, especially as the governor's Office of Emergency Service Director, he's required by law, anytime a predictive or precursory plan lands on his desk, he is required by law to determine whether it's viable or fallible. So, Governor Adrian at the governor's office, no more putting my emails in the little files. No more sending you abstracts from the Naked Scientist in London or Ed Science articles. I'm hoping that you get flooded with a ton of emails from the decent people on Coast to Coast AM who can tell an honest, cogent appeal when they hear it and to act on it.
Let's take some calls, and I've got more questions for you, David. We'll go to Ryan in Aurora, Colorado, first-time caller. Ryan, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, David. How are you guys tonight?
Good.
Hey, Ryan.
All right. Well, just basically something I want to point out here, and about looking at this stuff and all matters of life is so important right now. George, talking about those strange structures in China that you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah.
Well, about I think the second or third picture down, you see multiple grids going out for about 18 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see here now. From what this looks like to me, I don't know if you're familiar with HAARP in Alaska.
Oh, very much so, sure.
Yeah, shooting up energy into the ionosphere to manipulate, what some conspiracies say, to manipulate weather patterns. That's about, we have it about 30 acres long. This, to me, is what it looks like.
Yeah, and you know what? It could be the new evolution of HAARP because, I mean, they look like they've got this technology down to a science, if this is what it is.
Yeah. And if China has control like that, then, yeah, we need to start looking at at these situations in a much more serious light.
Yep, no doubt. No doubt. All right, Brian, thanks. Let's go to Jeff in Culver City, California. Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hi, David. How you guys doing? Yes,
evening,
it's been said that the metropolitan L.A. area is long overdue for an earthquake in the 7.9 to 8.1 magnitude range. And, you know, underneath downtown L.A. are numerous fault lines, yet massive construction still persists
sure
in
does.
The city, you know, during the gentrification. My question is this, David. Whenever this earthquake does strike, do you think that many of these newer buildings will withstand such a quake? And if not, what will future building codes be like after such a disaster? And I'll take your answer off there.
All right.
That's a good question, Jeff. And insofar as Los Angeles is concerned, my opinion is yes. Insofar as Seattle is concerned, though, for example, it would be a resounding no. Most people don't, and I don't want to waste too much time on this. I'm just going to say this very quickly for the people in the Pacific Northwest. The greatest under-the-radar section of on planet Earth where seismicity is not on the front of people's mind. If you were to ask anybody on the planet, earthquake, United States, they'd all say Los Angeles or San Francisco. Very few people would say Seattle. Seattle has thousands of buildings from the 30s. There are tons of Caltech doctoral theses which estimate that Vancouver, Portland, and Seattle, if the Cascadia moves, or even if a decent-sized tremor on the Seattle quake fault, on the Seattle fault, which runs directly underneath Seattle, if that were to take place, we would see something in Seattle that would rival what has never been seen in Southern California. But to answer Jeez. Jeff's question quickly, LA's pretty well. You have to give them credit; they're ready to rock and roll. But nothing. The newer ones are. Yeah, but nothing could stand up to an 8.1.
No,
there's going to be quite a bit of damage. But L.A. will be all right, and San Francisco too. Seattle, not so much.
Is there any danger of part of the West Coast physically falling into the ocean?
Well, you know, there are people who have done arcane studies that talk about harmonics. You know, there's a little bit of question as to what the San Andreas could dish out. Supposedly, it's between 8 and 8.1, or perhaps you could push it to 8.2. It's a very simple calculus based on the type of fault it is and the length of the fault. But there are some strange, arcane new theories that were harmonics, supersonic harmonics could take the San Andreas to a place where we could not imagine it going, which would be in the range that the Cascadia could. You know, the Cascadia can produce 9.1, 9.2. San Andreas cannot. About the worst you're looking at on the San Andreas, and I assume on the southern sections, that's what we're going to be looking at, is just what Jeff mentioned, 7.9 to 8.1.
Which is huge. Let's go next to Baltimore. Dexter's with us east of the Rockies. Good morning, Dexter. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Thank you for having me on, man.
My pleasure, pal.
I got cut off for the last couple of minutes, so I hope I don't repeat anything. But my question for your guest is that I feel like a lot of the coast-to-coast listeners know that, or at least believe that, there's a serious issue of weather warfare, going on throughout the world. And I'm wondering if all these increases in earthquakes and whatnot is directly related to, let's say, HAARP, like the last caller said, or just basic weather warfare.
All right.
To see what your guests have to say about that.
Is something man-made, David? Can that create earthquakes?
Well, I do have an opinion on a part of that. I have enough on my plate, with USGS after me. I don't want to add the United States Air Force and the Marine Corps too, but I will speak openly on one thing. What your caller intimated, that there's been more big quakes lately. That's not just what it seems. That actually is what has been. It's not a lot. It seems like a lot more because we're now in an information age where anything that happens at Christchurch, boom, we immediately know about it. Vancouver, the biggest earthquake in Vancouver Island's history just, a few weeks ago, since 1949, 48 hours away from one of my dates and times, by the way. Statistically, though, we have seen, especially in, you know, on the Ring of Fire, if you look at it, especially in the last 2 years, you know, Chile, Christchurch, Vancouver, there have been some big, big quakes in Japan. You know, that was the quake of a century. So he's right. There have been more quakes lately, and it's not just your imagination. And whether it has to do with some nastiness on the part of the Russians or the Chinese or our own government, I will keep quiet about that. I have enough problems with the people that I have enough detractors as it is.
But you do think it is possible for man to do it, don't you?
I do believe that it is. ELF technology to play games with the fault lines, or yeah.
And beam at it. Boom.
Absolutely, I believe it's possible.
Let's go to Landon in Ashland, Oregon. Go ahead, Landon. Thank you.
Hey there. How's it going?
Good.
I was wondering, since I noticed your time capsules between where you come in, where your earthquake prediction times are based on the moon and the tides and things like that.
Dawn and dusk,
yes. Looked into the solar extremities of, like, the way the flux of the protons come out of the sun emitting sometimes, I noticed within an 18-hour time frame, then it'll receive to Earth. And I predicted that 7.0 that happened up in Alaska a few months back, right around the time that Mount Cleveland was going active a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that time period. Now, I couldn't tell you when or where or exactly where, but, you know, I finally found a weird time slot between 18 hours of when the protons, not when there's a solar flare or correlation with the solar hole or anything like that. But the protons that are emitting in a certain frequency, you can watch them closely. They spread up and down, but still in a waveform. But when they change their interaction, like, dramatically, then you'll be able to see it. And then 18 hours later, there seems to be some other correlation that, like, a breathing of the solar system, if you will. Like, the frequency changes here on Earth and loosens up things a little bit, you know, like a bell ring.
All right, what about the sun, David? Does it have any effect at all?
Well, I listened very carefully to him, and you know, it's the first I've heard of that. But you know, it makes me—I'll say this on that. You know, tides are not the only game in town. Your listeners would be stunned to know all over the world the sort of research that's taking place regarding radon, regarding fluctuations in conductivity along a fault line, the calculus between P waves and S waves. This idea. The whole idea that earthquake prediction is impossible, that's got to be ditched right now. It's absurd on the face of it. We've measured the background radiation of the Big Bang from 14 billion years ago. That's possible, but lonely little earthquake prediction isn't. We've cataloged the whole genome of the human race, 3.5 billion combinations. That wasn't impossible. Well, who said earthquake prediction was impossible, by the way? Albert Einstein? Isaac Newton? I've looked. I can't find it. A few goofy people at USGS have said it, and then they've latched onto it from, you know, 100 years ago, and that's been the orthodoxy, the Byzantine orthodoxy that we're sluggishly dragging along into the 21st century. What you're, you know, I'm not certain what the, you know, flux of solar wind might have on the seismicity on planet Earth. I have an open mind to look at it, though, and I have an open mind to look at all the others, the ground-based indicators and the celestial indicators that would give us at least a rough approximation on when these higher probability times and dates might exist.
Well, we'll try to give you some help here, David, by going to your website, earthquakepredictors.com.